We are recording.
Awesome.
We're talking
Oh.
about episode
Episode 10.
10. It's 10.
Ten.
I was wanting to say
Yeah.
9, and I thought, no, we've done 9. 9's been, 9's up. 9 exists in the
Nine
universe.
exists, yeah.
In fact, by the time people see this, 10 will exist in the universe. Oh, that's
Mm.
weird.
I mean, time travel in it. That's the one thing they have. Also, my lighting, fuck. But anyway, I've got some
My lighting,
see, look,
fuck.
I'm all washed out.
You
Like,
look
it's too
fine. You
dark.
look fine.
Yeah, you look
Do I look
fine.
fine?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that any better?
It's more
No.
aesthetic.
Colorful.
Yeah, I'll go with colourful. I don't know. I kind of feel like I'm like what's her name? Violet from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Haven't
Like
seen that since I was
the
about
one,
seven.
that goes Violet.
Yeah. Oh,
Yeah.
yeah. Oh,
Violet
yeah. Right, right,
Beauregard.
right,
Yeah.
right, right.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's the one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't remember Roald Dahl names because he just
It does
anyway.
make up quite weird ones, doesn't it?
Yeah. Anyway, here's my preamble, right? Because I think people kind of like these like preambles. In fact, I have discovered that there's quite a few people I know that listen to the preamble here and then tune off when we actually start talking about The Expanse.
Well, you
Really?
should tell them there's more later as well,
As
then, you
well,
know.
yeah.
There's more.
So,
We
oh
go off and all this. I've got
so
two things to remember, and other than that, I'm all right.
yeah. So I watched a Christmas movie. It's December now, isn't it? It's December. Is it December 2nd or
Second, yeah.
something? Yeah.
At
And
time of recording.
at time of recording, it's December 2nd.
Oh
And
yeah, just, no, it's not necessarily December the 2nd when you're watching this. If you've got anything to
no,
do,
or it could be that it's December 2nd, 2025, 2026.
Or like
Could
the
be.
past, if like time
Yeah,
travel,
if time travel,
yeah.
yeah.
I
Or
mean, that would
time
be a
loops
good
around
way
again.
to boost our PeerTube numbers by actually publishing these videos in the past,
That would be
like
great if we did.
even before PeerTube existed,
Yeah.
so that like we just get the complete jump on a new platform.
So essentially, when the first humans evolve, this is the first thing they see, and we are the foundation of human culture.
And then they turn around
Be
and go back.
excellent to
It's
each
like that
other.
meme that's like turn around, go back. So I saw a Christmas film I never saw before. It's like a Hallmark so bad it's good Christmas movie.
I've
Yeah.
discovered, you say that Christmas film you've not seen before, I've discovered that they are churning them out at an alarming
At
rate.
an alarming
We
rate.
were talking the other day, like I think in America, Hallmark have 7 channels on whatever, you get. I don't understand how
Wow.
American channels work. They have 7 channels. One of them is just Christmas movies all year round. And then another one is just like holidays in general all year round. I think, and like various things, like, yeah, which I like. That's amazing. Which one did you watch?
So this is quite a new one, I believe, called Hot Frosty. It's about this woman who.
That title already is.
Yeah, I actually quite enjoyed it because, but like, it was quite funny. It's like a romantic comedy. It's about this woman who spends her entire life looking after other people, like the villagers, and the friends and the very special people in her life that she doesn't have time to enrich her inner self. And this is presented in a metaphor by her house falling down. One of her friends who owns a clothes shop gives her a magic red scarf. And this magic red scarf helped her find her husband, who looks a little bit like chubby Hitler, but that's not part of the story. It's the hair, like he just proper has the Hitler flop, you know? So this woman who is played by Gretchen from Mean Girls, I can't remember
I'm sorry, I
the
got distracted. My brain was like, okay, the Hitler flop should be the point at which should be the name for the point at which like a society tips into fascism.
Yeah,
But with Alexa Trump, it's the Hitler
so
flop.
Trump trips, so it's already tripped in the North America and in USA,
Yeah.
and I think we're on the cusp of it here if we're not careful. We've
Hamish,
got to be
please, can we
careful.
stay on topic? Tell us about this Hallmark movie, Chris.
This whole
Sorry.
okay, so they so th so so this woman she realizes, oh, this scarf, it's not really magic. It's just something that my friend gave me. So she wraps it around this snowman, and she has like this sort of introspective conversation with the snowman.
As you do.
She takes a photograph with a phone. I don't know if that's part of the magic. And then she walks off. So she's like basically discards this scarf around a snowman, which is so obviously like a mannequin, right? They don't even hide because he's got the thing where it's like he's got the arm there as if he's holding a jacket over his shoulder. because you if you were making a snowman, you'd make a snowman that posed like he was holding a jacket on his shoulder, right?
Because arms are really easy.
They're the easiest thing to make.
Especially like that, right? Not like down by your side, but like,
The natural, it's the stereotypical snowman,
And so she inadvertently cast this magic spell with her scarf that then brings this snowman alive.
What you've described up to this point, this is a Hitler flop, because it could go into horror film or it could go into rom-com.
So she walks away, and then at some point in the middle of the night, like at midnight, I'm assuming, or something like that, he becomes not a real person, but a person who looks like a person, but is like body temperature is really cold. So he's like half snowman, half person. And then
still in the horror story option.
Oh no, he's a hunk, right? Like he's. But the thing is, right? He's a hunk, but he's clearly like dehydrated himself to make him look really veiny and like really dense, muscly.
Okay.
So it's like they've really gone in for this like hardcore sort of hunk aesthetic, and basically all these women in the village, they're tripping themselves over him, trying to get him to like fit a light bulb or, you know, lay their flooring or whatever.
Pardon?
Goodness
me.
He doesn't lay any pipe though in the film. Because it's very wholesome.
So it's not plumbers. It's not a plumber fixing a bathroom.
It's not plumber, no. It's not the idea that porn gives an unrealistic expectation of a plumber showing up on time. So after basically everyone in the village tries it on with this hunk who was sort of stumbling around the village in a kind of like, you know, cartoon-esque way of like trying to fit in and convince people he's a normal person and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
He actually realizes that the one who created him and looked after him all along, the sort of the protagonist, was like his true love. And then the true love turns him into a real boy. And he does all these things like he helps out at the school with the school dance, and he basically brings the spirit of Christmas to this small village that actually seems a relatively nice village anyway.
It's always fucking idyllic where they're set.
They don't need a magical snowman to bring them Christmas. They were perfectly fine. Like they could go to Mozambique or something where I'm imagining Christmas is a bit more like difficult. No offense to Mozambique, right? Like I think you've got a
headcanon that like all these Hallmark movies, they take past after socialism has been achieved. So everybody's lives are pretty good anyway.
Yeah, that's probably it. And because there's no real
socialist propaganda.
Yeah, because I don't remember it's not really a very capitalistic place. Like the gift giving is much more wholesome and like people cooking.
Which is ironic, right? Given who's making the
But it has it has some familiar faces in that I've seen from other various like TV bits and pieces that I don't really sort of fully register enough. Like it was fun. I got to be honest.
I think it's easy to sneer at this kind of media, right? But I was talking to my sister about this last night actually. Like we've all got
stuff. Oh, it's Lacey Chabert.
We've all got stuff where we just want to turn our brains off and watch. Like I think I mentioned to you too. I spent far too long the other day, like. Probably 10 hours watching local news bloopers, local American news. You've all got your stuff that's just, it's comforting. And like, I don't think it should be. Same as like romance novels in the, you know, in the 70s and 80s, like mums would read romance novels and they're essentially the modern form of that. And like, they shouldn't be sneered at. Like, they're an art form.
The film seemed very self-aware. Well,
like, Lacey Chabert seems like quite a big name for something like that.
I think the Hallmark films, because people are watching them sort of semi-ironically, or what I think it really is happening, they're learning that they're actually quite fun to watch. Like they are attracting bigger names, which is interesting.
I genuinely enjoyed the film. Right, like it was like the comedy moments.
But they know what they're making. They don't think they're making, you know, because the people who sneer at them will compare them to like, you know, a top quality rom-com or something. They know they're not making that.
There's no such thing as a top quality rom-com. They're all the same fucking level. Joel Shirley was in it, and he's from Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah, he was funny in it. He was good.
Oh, and Craig Robinson's in it. He's also in Brooklyn Nine-Nine, but he's in lots of other stuff as well.
One of my favorite, I mentioned the other day, but I'll be very brief. One of my favorites is called Hats Off to Christmas. And the setup is there's a shop in this small town that sells pretty much only Christmas hats all year round. And oh no, their business isn't doing very well for some reason. So like big hotshot businessman comes in from the big city, and you know, with the manager who's a woman and blah blah blah. But yeah, this shop has like about 5 employees just selling Christmas hats all year round, and has a head office in the town which seems to employ hundreds of people. They've got like a warehouse that employs at least, you know, 4 or 5 people, and then like a legal department, a PR department, you know, like it's they know it's fucking stupid.
Yeah. And
but the stupidity is part of the fun.
Yeah. This, I mean, I enjoyed this film more than any Hugh Grant film. Like,
oh,
it's,
God, yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's just like, it was, because the comedy was, whilst silly, funny. Like, I laughed out loud several times in it. You know, so I don't, I guess I kind of recommend it, really. I'm honest, like, because it's like, I don't know, it's hunk comedy, hunk based comedy, you know, like, it's,
yeah.
So much like this show, then,
yeah.
No, we're very serious,
yeah. But anyway, so that's my preamble for those that enjoy it.
Okay, this is a good episode. I think we're done. Yep.
Yeah. Thank you all. See you next time.
Thank you for watching.
Right.
All right, Cascade. So I actually enjoyed this one a lot more on the second watch than the first watch.
I've watched it about 5 times because we've been postponed and delayed a couple of times.
Yeah, I got the impression first time you didn't, because you were pushing again for doing them in chunks.
Yeah.
You know, doing a batch of thingies, but yeah. Because it is... the whole latter half of this season, I think, is build up. It's all momentum episodes and build up episodes.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying the Amos and Prax dynamic.
Yes.
And as you were saying about Holden seeming to be in a little bit of a tailspin as a result of not really knowing who the bad guys are, what he's doing, we sort of see this intensify a little bit, because basically, it's the chicken guy is where a lot of this character development takes place. This guy that can find, or claims to find, May, and does find May, because he's a greasy hacker, really, right? Mm-hmm. Like he works for Chicken. When I was expecting, when they were telling me about this,
he's in
character,
the pocket of Big Chicken.
He's in the pocket of Big Chicken. Yeah, Canned Chicken. When he was telling about this guy that only works for Chicken, my mind went straight to, oh, right, so this proto-molecule has generated, like, a person who just loves chicken and finds people for chicken. Like,
a proto-molecule bodybuilder.
Yeah.
He only wants chicken, rice, and broccoli.
Yeah. But it's like, my imagining is that they were going to go to, like some sort of window that you can't see the person, so he's like, I'll give you the information. you give me chicken, I give you the information. And it's like, it's basically a proto-molecule being proto-man who's just pretending to be human to get chicken, because that's their proto-molecule destiny in life.
I love that. That's a spin-off show.
But it actually turned out to be now a really greasy guy, and basically, you know, he was trying to barter about, you know, finding May, and then Amos basically just got the canned chicken and just like started hitting him with the canned chicken. And I'm thinking, like, at the time you think, this guy definitely deserves it, right? This guy's a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Hit him with the canned chicken. Because like James Holden held back Naomi.
Yeah, he immediately grabbed Naomi.
So Holden was on the side of Amos for this one, and then Prax stepped in. But the thing he said was, "You can't tell you where May. You can't give us the information."
Yeah,
if
it's his head's bashed then. Yeah,
yeah. Because I'm not a homicidal maniac.
Yeah,
I thought you weren't a homicidal maniac.
But then Amos, I think Amos,
I didn't kill. Yeah, that was. Yeah, sorry. Oh, you stepped on that bit there, Drew. Christmas.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, what? So, like,
so he said he's not a homicidal maniac, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he says, I'm not a homicidal maniac, but he couldn't remember how many people he killed. Or presumably he didn't have a number in his head. And then when Prax later asked him, I thought you weren't a homicidal maniac. It's like, it's just eating the canned chicken that you beat someone up with. Presumably it's the same kind of chicken.
Well, he says,
I didn't kill him.
But no, Amos, because Prax is brought up by Belter standards in like relative security and prosperity. Like he's worked in a nice place, plenty of food, blah, blah, blah. And Amos sort of lays out like what this dude's role in this kind of society. You know, he would take your daughter and sell her into prostitution, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Although, I mean, they kind of went from like greasy hacker to pedo like really quickly, right?
Well,
like,
no, could you see the woman coming out the door who is clearly she's desperate for some information, and he's made her do some sexual thing in exchange for it. So like the context is there for that, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah, yeah. So we're not really pissed off at Amos for that. He's doing...
No, that's a successful negotiation.
It's a successful negotiation. I mean, he doesn't deserve chicken.
To be fair, Naomi does sort of agree as well. She's more introspective about it than the others. And that's what I think she's kind of shocked at Holden's willingness to go further than he has in the past.
Yeah, I think she's not bothered by the... Well, I mean, she probably... We all recoil from violence. But it's not that so much as, like, she's uncomfortable with Holden being comfortable with it. Like, she sort of relies on him as the moral compass or whatever.
Possibly. And I mean, is it too violent too quickly? I mean...
It does happen. Yeah. But then, if you pay attention to the way the guy's talking and the words he said, and then he comes out with it, it's just business or whatever, and that's when Amos sort of snaps.
I think Amos is reading this dude better than the other people.
Yeah, from the start.
He's seen him before, right?
He's seen the guy 100 times.
I think that's the thing
with Amos, actually, is that Amos has seen these people before. He's seen all these people before. And he might not recognize that person, but he recognizes the player, he recognizes the character, the part they're playing in a story. And he just reacts to that quickly. That's in a way a gift that he's got is for reading people, especially shitty people, quickly.
It's great, except when he's wrong.
Yeah.
He can be wrong.
But he's probably not wrong here.
Not often wrong. No, he's not wrong here.
No.
We do not believe so.
Prax comes in, but the first thing he says is he can't help us if he's dead or something to that effect.
Yeah, he can't help.
I mean, he is also disturbed by the violence. Like
he's just met these people as well.
Yeah,
you know,
and like, you know, I mean, even a deserving person, I wouldn't like to see them get their head smashed in with a can of chicken.
It's a waste of good chicken.
Can we talk about canned chicken for a second?
I've never had canned chicken, I don't think.
No, I don't think I have either. I think I've maybe seen a chicken curry in a can or something, but I can't. Now, the thing is, I'm reminded, I don't know if you've ever... Oh, what's his bloody name? I forgot his name. Stuart Ashen, Ashens. Do you know?
Oh, I know Ashen. I love Ashens. Yeah, he's great.
Well, you know how he does all these weird food videos that he's done in the past? He does one where it's an entire cooked chicken in a can.
Yeah.
Like bones and everything. He's like... What the fuck is this? And I wonder those little—they were like spam type cans. They were rounded ones, squarey ones. And I wonder what the actual.
I think I've had it. I think I've had canned chicken that you just sort of slice, and it is like it's got a bit more of a chickeny texture than
so
spam.
So it's a bit like the spam then, yeah.
Yeah, it's the spam. It's the spam of chicken, and it tastes vaguely. It's one of those. It's a reconstituted meat. So
yeah, reconstituted. That's the word.
Like
Thank
the
you.
Grain is going in all directions at the same time, kind of thing. But it tastes like chicken, and
it's probably like recovered chicken. You know, the scraped off the last scraping, recovered. Mechanically recovered. Yeah, the last scraping from the bone that they can get away with before it becomes just bone.
But yeah, those canned chickens where it's the noise of, like, cause it's a big chicken because it's a big can because it contains a whole chicken, and they open it up. They tip it out, and then it kind of goes like when this chicken in sort of like jellyish gravy and it looks noise. It doesn't look cooked, but it looks, I don't know, it's all weird. I'd eat it for sure, but like it, yeah. Have you seen the canned hamburgers?
You're
as well?
Like, oh, yeah. You're like me though. It's bachelor chow, isn't it? You know.
I'll eat it.
They don't make a vegan spam, and I would have thought that.
Oh wow.
I'm unhappy that they make a non-vegan spam. You like spam is not something to aspire to.
What about vegan canned chicken?
Canned chicken much better than for me. Much I do not enjoy spam.
I used to like it as bachelor chow. You know,
it's interesting that I've
well, you can chop it up and put it in something or whatever. You know, use it as a cheap meat. Actually, it's not that cheap, is it? That's the thing. Because it was probably cheap at one point, but then it became like a normal thing, and that you know, and then a hipster thing, and it's like, oh, fuck off, you know.
A bit like Hallmark movies. started off as just some ship cheap slop, and then suddenly, as people started liking it, it suddenly started to gain this type of prestige.
I've watched some Korean cooking things, and spam seems to actually be quite big in Korean cooking because of the occupation. Like, American Occupy has brought it there, and it's become sort of a staple over there, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a big proponent of canned goods in general.
Yeah.
Because like obviously, you know, as a country and ideally as a society, we'd like to reduce our use in plastics as much as possible. Mm. And it's like cans are right there, right? They're like you can mass produce them pretty cheaply, they're infinitely recyclable, they come in standardized sizes, unlike plastic bottles. And like, why we haven't just banned drinking plastic drinking bottles when we've got cans that are just as good, really? You know, like,
you know,
I'm a big drink, cans
have a plastic seal on the inside as well, though.
But very little plastic compared to a bottle.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, presumably they got to be better, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's essentially because...
The one thing about... before you go into water, we're talking about canned food. Of course, the problem with canned food is everything in a can is cooked.
Mm.
Every canned food is a cooked food. You can't help it because of the canning process, if nothing else. So there's some things that, you know, you maybe want to cook yourself. I can't think of any off the top of my head that bothers me because I'm on the same page. I'm like, yeah, fuck it.
I think the problem is that beans and sausages comes out the same with the jelly thing
and the that's, you know, that's bachelor chow.
But I think the problem with canned food is that it's cooked at very high temperatures. So anything where that would destroy the flavor is destroyed.
Yeah,
so
But that still gives us a lot of scope, and we can adapt.
I mean, I eat a lot of canned stews, and they are surprisingly good.
Yeah.
Well, what they probably do with that stuff is put the really strong flavor parts in extra. You know, like the spices and herbs that they use, they probably put like twice as much as they would normally put in, and
it's another thing I have strong feelings about. We should go back to using can openers, not ring pulls, because the ring pull tops are much. They have to be much thicker. You're using more metal there, so go back to can openers. Aren't that? It's marginally more effort. It's marginally more effort to use a can.
Not everything I've got is quite a few things I've got I get are still
And the best can opener is the old not the chug-chug-chug, not that kind, but the one after that that's just a very simple metal.
The butterfly one.
The fancier ones.
Yeah, it's difficult
not to get working so quick.
Yeah, I've got one of those ones where it cuts around the side and I'd prefer. A butterfly. Yeah. One, I mean,
the old Tom and Jerry ones, they're not too bad.
Like, they're fine. Yeah,
I don't know
fine.
Why I made the sound effects, but there you go.
The problem is they make very jaggedy edges that you can,
they're workable, but they're not the ideal. But like, you know, the key because you can have them on a what keychain, you call it, like a keychain or a knife.
Also, cans. I love canned sardines. Like, I love fresh sardines as well. But
I just don't like fish.
On toast with some black pepper, fucking beautiful.
There's a video. I'm sure I've showed it to you at some point, which is just this guy who describes the evolution of the drinks can over the years, and it's a bit like the flags. He reminds me a little bit of the flags guy that we often friend of the show flags guy,
pre-modernist.
Pre-modernist, that's the one.
Yeah.
And he just explains how, first of all, like how cans evolved through time when they had tabs rather than ring pulls, all that kind of stuff. And also, like, how they work structurally, because they're very, very cleverly, like, evolved over time. They're very thin around the outside. They actually use a surprisingly little amount of metal. Most of the metal's in the top and the bottom to keep the strength of it.
Yeah.
And, so it just sort of demonstrates how we got it right we didn't get it right initially, like the can evolved over time and got better and better, but it because the trouble with plastic bottles is that they, like, all these brands have to have a special shape and they're not particularly easily stackable. But if we were to move from, say, plastic bottles to glass, for example, which admittedly has its own problems, it takes a lot of energy to
bars
make.
Still do that bars iron brew right. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and
no, not bars. I mean, bars—the company, not bars, as in.
Mm-hmm. But they take a fair amount of energy to make, which, you know, you can work around that, but that's still,
well, you can wash and reuse rather than melting them down every time.
So if we just said, look, we have come up with a standard like milk bottle size type of
well, we used thing. To have fucking milk bottles that were washed and reused with a foil top.
Yeah. And then we could certainly do that. But the thing is with glass as well, is that whilst yes, you can reuse them and even recycle them. Reusing them is obviously substantially better. Even if they just go into landfill, they're not particularly harmful.
Oh yeah, no, not at all.
I think that's
it's sand and a bit of sodium, basically.
That's our.
With you on that. I've been thinking because of the UN meeting on plastics that didn't come to a resolution. Mm-hmm. Been thinking about the plastic. I mean, we obvious, but the single use plastic packaging. I don't see the fucking also. Get a bottle of brown sauce now. You have to pull a thing off the top before you can use it. Bread has got the little, you know, the little things that you have to this is all to stop people poisoning you, right?
Mm.
I have no fear of people poisoning me. I'd rather
if
risk
they really want to, there's easier ways. There's ways to get through all that. Yeah.
I'd rather risk people have the use of poisoning than all these single use fucking things on everything.
Yeah.
Sorry, I've got an eyebrow problem in case I'm twitching and annoying everybody. There's a bit I can't work out if it's errant or if it's in my glasses or what.
Oh, yeah.
When I was a kid, in the late 70s, early 80s, I used to go shopping with my mum. And at that point, you would go to a greengrocer's, and there was a sort of a general store type store, but you go up and say, I want this much cheese, and they cut you that much cheese off. And then wrap it in wax paper. It was still beginning of my life.
A lot more with paper packaging.
Yeah.
Which is...
I was going to say something. Oh, yeah. Two things you've popped in my head. One of them is bars. As far as I know, I don't know if they still do it, but they have a give your bottle back, get money back on the bottles. At least they did up until a few years ago. And the other one is that in the 80s, ring pulls...
came off.
They came off completely, and also they came in at two pieces, and you could use the flat bit to ping the ring bit like a sort of toy.
I should
I like the younger person's going, yeah, okay, granddad.
you know those Costa machines or whatever, the fancy coffee machines, you probably don't use.
I don't drink coffee, but... is it they have them in small shops?
Yeah.
I think the shop there might have one, and I've just never paid attention to it.
Yeah, I wonder. I'm assuming you can use your own flask, right? If you just put the flask under and fill it up.
Yeah. But
some of them are very, they're measured, though, aren't they?
Well, they
I suppose you can measure it.
I've seen a few ones, and then they give you a receipt comes up the top, and they scan it at the till or something like that. That's one of the types.
Oh, right, okay.
But another one
that should be normalised, taking your own cup to the coffee shop. As well.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, not the main problem, but a big, stop buying bottled water.
Yeah.
Unless it's an emergency, stop buying fucking bottled water.
Well, I mean, canned water, they do canned water now.
Yeah, I mean, if you're in a country where the drinking water isn't safe, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, in the UK and the US. Yeah, don't stop buying. Well, in the US, there's some places where drinking water isn't safe.
Although, are we saying this from three different areas where the drinking water is actually quite nice?
No, the drinking water's shit here. It's horrible here.
No, it's great here.
Where I come from, drinking water's brilliant. Mm. But around here, it's really horrible.
Mm. But what about squash? It's I think I got summer fruits at the moment. I quite like that.
That's the thing where I think America does this better, not on average, but they have because there's no reason for that to have the liquid in it at the start. You're adding water anyway. Just sell it as a powder, and then there's far less packaging. You don't have to make a plastic bottle. You can make a little papa sachet.
Don't they do that now? With the squashes,
is that more common now?
I think it
should
is.
Be. Yeah. That should be the default for squash, because it is essentially just powders in water
it's
that
just
you add
flavoring
more water
that you add to water.
Yeah,
I mean I don't know enough about squash to know if that would affect the flavor, because I can imagine Americans are just used to a lower standard
squash.
Of food.
Possibly, yeah.
I mean, yeah. Don't get me wrong. I'm not looking for haute cuisine or whatever the drink equivalent of that is, right? I mean, I drink squash because it's just mildly interesting. To drink, right?
In Scotland, we call that juice.
Juice, yeah. The same here, actually. We would call it juice.
But you called, presumably you called Juice Juice as well, though, right?
Well, we didn't get juice.
Yeah. We didn't get actual fruit juice, if that's what you're talking about. No.
But that would generally be like, you would call that orange juice or grapefruit juice. Yeah, and then squash is just juice. Yeah, it's the juice. Same here. Yeah.
Mm. What do Americans call it?
Diluting juice. Diluting juice, we'd call it.
Diluting
I think
juice.
It varies regionally in America, because there's some places where they say pop, like us, like, or like we used to.
Mm. But like, what about squash?
But the places where they call all fizzy drinks Coke.
Yes,
which is weird.
That is weird.
In Glasgow, they talk about fizzy drinks. They call them all ginger.
Oh, really?
So a bottle of Iron Brew or a bottle of Coke or whatever—that's a bottle of ginger.
Oh, that's nice. I like
that's
that.
Weird. Because ginger, yeah, you think ginger beer, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, it fades. Oh. Oh, it's these dark days.
See, I had to put the light on, or you wouldn't have seen me at all. It was just
actually, it is proper dark outside, isn't it? At 4:30.
Mm. Yeah, it's coming up to the longest night, the shortest day. Mm. So I'm looking forward to the days drawing out, but it takes a while for them to get moving, doesn't it? Oh, I've still got my wristbands on, by the way.
Well done.
Right, anyway,
this, on the whole time.
Are we talking about the Expanse again at some point?
Yeah, should we do an Expanse segment
of this podcast? So Amos beats the guy with the canned chicken and,
find out that May has been taken by Strickland to...
Well, I got a name right already.
Hey. Strickland's taken May to a part of Ganymede Station, so it seems like they're still on Ganymede, right?
No, they've gone back to Ganymede.
Strickland and May.
Strickland and May.
Oh, right. Yeah, they're still in Ganymede, yeah. Yeah, yeah there's still a lot of people. I mean, the whole place wasn't destroyed. It was just, like, a lot of it.
So I'm starting to be pretty sure that May and the other kid that was mentioned, I forget his name now, they are basically, Strickland is I think, going to try and cure May with the proto-molecule as an experiment.
Okay, yeah.
That's my sort of guess at the moment. Let's see. I'm just going to try and find out the name of...
It's K, doesn't it? It's K something. The kid.
Yeah.
The other kid.
I'm just going through the subtitles.
It's something something. I keep thinking Tolliver, but it's not that.
It's not. It's.
I keep thinking quinoa.
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 Yeah. Bassia. Oh no. That's the guy. No, that's the guy.
Kamala.
Something like this. okay. Hang on. No, stay Bassia. Rest. I'll talk to Rev. Oh, I don't know.
They were best friends and all that.
He likes chicken. Okay. Anyway, this kid that Bassia's son, I'm assuming, or daughter.
Son.
That seems like a son. Yeah. So he also seems to. He has the same genetic condition as May. So I'm assuming that like. The proto-molecule is being tested by Strickland to see if it can rewrite genetics.
That's plausible. Obviously, we're not going to,
you can poke us. That's the one. That's the one, yeah. So I think that's... So I'm thinking that there's going to be like a further moral quandary, which is, okay, he's testing out this like wildly untested technology on children, but the catch is there's a good chance that they would have a terrible quality of life and maybe even a short life if they didn't do anything. Because there definitely felt like a sense of like defeatism almost when they talk about May, you know, like
when who talks about May?
When Prax talks about May.
Yeah, right.
Like
right,
it's like
yeah.
like just like sadness and general sort of a sense of defeat. Like it's not like, oh, she's gonna overcome this and be great. You know,
yeah.
He's more of a
It sounds like the kind of illness that can maybe be treated but can't be cured. And
Yeah. That's kind of what I was getting. So, I'm really enjoying Prax as a character, actually.
Prax is great. I love Prax. Yeah.
And it was interesting how
Drew did predict you would like him.
I mean, how can someone not like him? Like, he's just like he's a tender soul in a rough world, right? Like, it's and I like that when he was, I don't know, like, not feeling a bit like he, not necessarily overwhelmed, but like he sort of left Roma to go and look at the plant arrays. And he was like, is that what he does when he wants to center himself
Well, he knows there's something going wrong, and he's checking it out.
Yeah.
I think he instinctively wants to fix it. You know, he understands plants. The plants are sick.
He actually says that it's something I can actually do or something.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's sort of like that's his like sort of using a sense of agency, you know, or gain.
Yeah.
Sort of feeling like he has agency, but he says that they need, is it a high nitrate solution?
And they're using thingy standard water.
Yeah. And he says that, like, he explains it so well. Like, in nature, you got all these diverse environments that can take various natural disasters and what have you. But when you've got a system that has had all its hard edges soften round to the point where it's just like, you know, like, instead of having like a web of nature, you've got a chain of nature, and then if a chain like breaks,
well, he describes it, and I like how he describes it, as a simple complex system. So it's complex enough that humans can't quite.
That's,
you know,
a juxtaposition. Those two words.
It is a juxtaposition.
Junky position. But
too simple. It doesn't have enough diversity, enough pathways to deal with too much problems all at once, which is cool.
Yeah. So
his assessment is that the place is fucked. Like, it's
essential.
It's so that because they're past the point of no return.
I wonder what that's a metaphor for.
I mean, either global climate, either global warming or protomolecule, or both.
I was thinking, global warming is, it's a little bit of a parable, I think.
Yeah. So, he says that the cascade is already, it's like the domino meme, where you got like the small domino, the slightly bigger domino, the slightly bigger domino, and it's like the first one's already gone. So you got the cascade effect, as he calls it. And so what does that mean for Ganymede?
Well, I mean, where I go to is they built this from nothing at some point, so they can rebuild it from nothing again. But obviously, building it from nothing again is going to be much harder. And I think the implication is that he's the only one who's noticed this. So it's you know, the whole getting back Ganymede back on its feet, and they, you know, they've talked about it as a breadbasket for the belt. So it's got to, you know, this is going to be a long term problem for the belt is the implication, I think.
Yeah. It's a very precarious economy. So,
well, I mean, they all, you know, ours is too. You know, if you take out the big food producers in the world, and, you know, if they get some new,
this is the problem with globalization and capitalism taking, you know, everything taking over. You know, it's two or three huge things owning and controlling everything. It's like, when something goes wrong with one of them, and I mean, we see that with fuel. You know, we see that with the oil pipelines. And
I mean,
it
was literally one of. I mean, there was more to the potato famine than this, but like one of the causes of the potato famine is the English went in and said, "No, stop growing all your weird breeds of potatoes. Grow these two breeds that are the best breeds, and we say they're the best." So everybody grew all the same breeds of potatoes, and then there was a particular pest that this breed was susceptible to, and many of the others weren't. And so, you know, rather than part of the crop being wiped out, the entire fucking crop. I mean, again, it was farm. That wasn't the thingy factor, but
definitely. And also, when is it the evergreen? Was it the evergreen in the Suez Canal? Was that what the ship was called? And it blocked up the Suez Canal, and then basically that caused global chaos for a while.
I mean, what's this? The metaphor here is, you know, we are you know, as environmentalists, like say we're in the middle of an extinction event. We are taking biodiversity out of the environment. And I think that's often cast as a moral issue, like, oh, it's sad that we're killing all these poor animals. But that's not really the point. The point is that, you know, what practice is saying, the more biodiversity you take out of the system, the less able it is to cope with shocks.
Yeah.
And we don't understand the system, so it's not like we can go, oh, it's safe to take this species out. That doesn't really matter. You know, they all play a complex part in something that we don't really understand, and it's better to not do that.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
So, yeah. So I hope Ganymede's okay. But I or at least the Prax maybe saves the day. That'd be kind of cool. Yeah, he's got the belter haircut. So
yeah,
like he's kind of an interesting belter, isn't he? Because he's like he's recognized as a belter. I wouldn't necessarily recognize him as a belter because he doesn't have the belter lingo. Like he doesn't use the belter slang.
But he can do that when he code shifted on the ship. You know, he switched from one to the other. Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. We're all the same. I know you're always doing this, Chris.
But he, and also I suppose he doesn't. He's not.
What racist
he's,
thing are you going to say now?
He's a bit softer than your average belter, right? Like he's a bit.
Yeah.
He's not going to throw out anyone out of an airlock, is he?
No.
That's, you know.
He's a middle class belter.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose so. Or
like kind of, I think that is.
That's kind yeah.
of. I think
yeah.
that's the implication.
Yeah. He's certainly or like the higher end working class, you know, the upper working class belter type of thing. Cuz like, you know, he's still victim to the same politics that
affect him. I meant more culturally than economically,
Similar to Miller, I guess, in that regard. Is Prax the Miller of the series, maybe?
Kind of, yeah.
Cool. Okay. I think is that everything on the Holden plot line? We know that like Naomi and one thing I am sort of noticing from the Amos Prax partnership, because they've had a few scenes together now, so they're obviously building up some kind of relationship.
He just seems to be the one that's looking after him, really, and he's thinking about the little girl and everything, you know. It's a crusade he can get behind.
But also, like, because Holden and Naomi seem to be in a bit of a moral questioning stage at the moment. Because even Naomi, she's not saying what's right or wrong. She's just saying,
no,
"I'm uncomfortable with doing these shitty things." And Holden's like,
"Well, I think it's." I'm uncomfortable with Holden being okay with these shitty things.
Well, yeah, but she also says, like, every shitty thing we do seems to make the next one easier.
Yeah, she can fuck off with that. Like, she starts to irritate me with that.
Well, that's the thing. It's like Holden sort of basically says, I'll find a way to live with it.
Yeah.
Which is fundamentally just a way of saying the ends justify the means.
No, he doesn't say I'll find a way. He says, if we do what we came to do, if we achieve what we came to achieve, I'll find a way to live with it. So it's interesting that he actually puts a caveat on it.
I actually like that conversation. It's at the start of the episode because Holden and Naomi. So Naomi's basically saying we got that dude's husband killed, and Holden's like, no, we fucking didn't. If she'd let us do kind of the argument I was making last episode, like if she'd let us do what we needed to do, then she killed the husband essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
He's in the right there. Basis, yeah.
If they just left them to it, they would have both been dead anyway.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah. That's more his point. Yeah.
But I think both things apply.
Mm. But with Amos, I think part of what's happening is, so he always relies on Naomi or, you know, somebody to make his moral choices for him because he doesn't trust himself. Mm. But the situation with May is a situation where he understands what's right and wrong, and he doesn't need somebody else making his decisions for him in this instance.
Yeah.
So he's cut. This is self-directed Amos, which I think is interesting.
Well, see, but then I think he's sort of working with Prax on a kind of.
But not in that same relationship as it was with Naomi.
But that's kind of the interesting development of Amos here, where it's like he's not seeking a moral guidance from Prax,
but
he does recognize that Prax is a good guy.
Mm.
And it's like, you know what? Maybe I maybe I just align myself with the, like, not align, but just like he's.
Well, I think it's important because before his relationships have always been unequal.
Mm.
He's really been subservient, and I mean, people have referred to Amos to Naomi as like your attack dog and stuff like that, and there was some truth in that. Whereas I think this is probably the first friendship he's had for a while where they're equals in this.
Yes,
they do different things; they're not dependent.
The other thing about this is that I should say things while they're in my head. I was going to say the other thing about it is that Amos is feck, it's gone out my head. Articulation zero.
Okay.
I was getting something else that was said earlier in the episode, and it's gone out my head now. Okay. No, I've got it. It was that he said when they have that conversation about I'm not a homicidal maniac. He does say something about Holden and Naomi being better than him.
Mm.
But he'll help him get his little girl. They'll help, you know. They'll make sure you get your little girl back. And that's accepting his own limitations that he is.
Mm.
You know, he wants to as well, but he's got to be part of that and be. He's got to be the part he plays.
There's a huge irony to that right now because right now, Holden and to a lesser extent Naomi, like they're not really interested in saving the kid. Like they would if they could.
Yeah, they're worried about the proto molecule. Yeah.
Whereas Amos, that is his principal concern right now. So right now, he's actually a better. You know, in those terms, he's a better person than they are.
He doesn't recognize it sometimes.
No.
Yeah, and also I think that particular line sets out it sets out the thing that he's probably going to challenge about himself in the coming bit of the arc, which is like he thinks of Holden and Naomi as better than him, but really, like even in this event, whilst I don't think it's useful to weigh the importance of May versus the protomolecule. Both are important in their own ways.
Mm.
And arguably, you could say, well, if the protomolecule ends up being disastrous, then more people could die.
Yeah, just like Eros. Yeah.
But like that doesn't take away from the fact that actually, maybe we should save a child from being kidnapped.
That basic immediate humanity versus,
exactly. And
versus and the like, greater good.
Yeah, and it's like they're not necessarily mutually exclusive or nothing.
Mm.
It's just that Amos understands that particular moral problem better than the protomolecule, which is admittedly for a lot of people a complex problem anyway.
Yeah. It is. I mean, so, we talked at length, you know, last episode or the previous about the whole greater, you know, even down to Jules Pierre-Mau, like is he thinking about the greater good? So that is a complex.
It's a complex situation.
I think that Amos has. Like you sort of mentioned quite some time ago about like Amos being like, I don't know if this is right, like sociopathic or like lacking of empathy, but like I don't think I buy that because
it's that's what he thinks of himself at least, and he's definitely because of his upbringing he's been traumatized and that is a thing that happens, you know. But I wouldn't say he lacks it. I think it's just suppressed.
I wouldn't even say it's suppressed. I'd just I think part of it. Is self-esteem in terms of his
that's like what we're saying about he thinks that they're Holden and Naomi are better than him. That seems like almost of a self-esteem thing than anything else. I'll be right back. Carry on.
I think that's in there, but I think fundamentally when you have suffered that kind of trauma, particularly as a child, you learn how to switch your emotions off so that you can't be hurt. So it's more it's only safe to keep your emotions switched off all the time, and then after some time you can't switch your emotions back on. And he's fumbling around for that on switch, I think, is what's happening here, you know.
Yeah, pretty much.
He gets the child situation because he's empathizing with the child because he's been in a situation where he was, you know, in danger and abused and whatever. So he has natural empathy for that child, where it's harder for him to empathize with somebody who's a bit more, you know, different or removed from that experience, I think.
Yeah. And Amos is like a working class lad, right? Like he's not necessarily going to be fully... fully able or willing to like empathize with you know bourgeois shall we say but he can easily empathize with yeah, like what he relates to.
And I think he's better at thinking in the short. He understands things in the short term, things that are one step. You know, this child's in danger, save the child. He, you know, that's something he can wrestle with.
Yeah. All right. Should we move on to Earth?
Before we go away from Ganymede, just a bit where they're, you know, Roma, the sleazy coder dude, and they're doing the facial recognition thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's flashing up, you know, it does the cinematic facial recognition flashing up a bunch of pictures. Mm-hmm. That is some slow-ass facial recognition.
Yes. Yeah. But that's so we can see it. I know
it's so weak, yeah. It's the language of,
and also I suspect a lot of the people used for it are, you know, friends of the show. People are friends, yeah. You know, oh, I got your picture in the show and everything.
What if it was like one person that was like got their photo taken for the photo that comes with photo frames?
Yeah. Just
like... What is the licensing on those? They must be open license, right? They must be free use. Or is it free for them to sell them in the frame, but not free for... Yeah, they probably just own a license to do that, and you couldn't reproduce them, which is weird.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's not interesting. Interesting.
Also, I'm not entirely certain, but I think Roma has, like, two screens up with facial recognition on, but I think they're just mirroring screens. Like, I think they're the same thing on two screens. Or either very similar, yeah. Just like, I mean, it's you know, fun props in space and stuff. But,
yeah.
What's the gravity on Ganymede?
I don't think they've said, but it looks one-ish.
Well, it's not gonna be. I don't know, because I thought Ganymede would have been quite small.
Actually, I mean, it's going to be a lot. Actually, is Ganymede small? I mean, some of the moons of whatever are quite big, aren't they? Is it Saturn or Jupiter?
Ganymede's gravity is 0.146 G.
Oh, that's pretty low. Didn't look that low.
Doesn't, but maybe they've got... I don't know, actually.
No, that is like... Okay, so that's like a tenth of our gravity, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's 0.146 of our gravity.
Yeah, when I'm looking at Prax, like looking at all the cables and stuff... looking at all the the thing that's getting all the nutrients around, and it's like, and he's moving bits and pieces around, and that is like, that's 1G. I'll know 1G.
I know 1G when I see it.
Yeah.
And the way people's hair is moving, there's no Julie Mao floatiness.
Yeah. And also, like, presumably, if you were in a 1G environment, a 0.12G environment. You could just jump up onto really high platforms. You'd build that into your architecture. You'd have like vertical. You'd have a lot more vertical things.
Steps, stairs would have like steps this far apart.
Yeah. You could just.
I did notice actually. Speaking of zero G hair, because you know that the Julie Mao zero G hair effect that must have been incredibly expensive. In the previous episode where Prax's friend is getting airlocked.
Mm.
Just before she goes into the airlock and she's going to be in zero G, she ties her hair up. They don't have to, like, no real reason for her. She's walking into the airlock.
Cheaper for the budget.
Puts her hair in a bun. Yeah. And every time I see that, it makes me laugh. It's like, yeah, I didn't have the budget for that hair.
She's out in space. Yeah, when she's out in space, go.
Yeah.
What?
I'm a fish.
They were in a ship before. So were they in G?
When they're in a ship, they can just say it was accelerating, so there was gravity. Yeah.
Or decelerating. I mean, you see them flip around.
There's no such thing as decelerating.
Oh, yeah, I know. Accelerating slower or whatever.
No, accelerating in a different
vector. In the other direction.
Vector.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Physics, mate. Physics.
So your car, it doesn't have an accelerator and a brake. It has an accelerator
No, it's not. It's a brake.
Accelerator. You're accelerating in the other direction. No.
Yeah, but that's not what... It's still a brake.
No.
It operates an entirely different mechanical way from
an accelerator.
So if you turn the blowers in the car to the opposite direction to brake, then Yeah, you know the blowers? If you could somehow turn them over so that they faced forward, they blew
blowers
air
that
out
blow
the front,
air at you. Oh, yeah, I see, right.
And use them as a brake. That would be accelerating slower, right?
That would be accelerated.
It's an air brake.
Accelerated.
Acceleration is a change in your speed.
I'm going to just... What does it say on the dictionary?
Well, it'll give you the physics definition, now I'm going to have to look up the exact physics definition, because otherwise...
Changing velocity yeah. sounds right. Right.
Yeah, oh, because no, yeah, direction, it can be direction, not just the speed, yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah,
but I knew there was something I was missing there, thanks Drew for the...
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, I think Wikipedia has, you know, has it, but I'm just thinking like, okay, Cambridge, the increase in something's speed or its ability to go faster. There we go. So you know.
Well, no, but that's the point. If you slam your brakes on in the car, you are going faster backwards than you were.
Faster backwards, or yes. Less fast, some might say,
or less fast forwards. Yeah, you can
say. Less fast forwards.
But it's all. But the point is, physically, it's all acceleration.
Yeah, but dictionarily,
dictionarily, yeah.
This is not a science podcast.
It's a dictionary podcast now.
And it's certainly not an English language podcast either.
If you want any science questions come answering, come to us. We are experts.
We're experts,
yeah.
Anyway.
And there's a little bit, which I don't know if... and Alex. There's a bit with Alex. Bit, yeah. I guess that kind of counts.
That's where they blew the budget. A bit of wire
actually,
work.
I'll say before. I hate this bit with Alex.
It is a bit pointless.
It's boring. It doesn't serve anything, and clearly it was quite expensive.
Yeah.
I kind of agree. Yeah,
I don't care that he's doing a fancy trick with his can and stuff. Like, I don't care. It's that scene.
I've got
is
two.
For
yeah,
me,
I've got another. Yeah, sorry, carry on.
I was just going to say it's the least interesting bit in the entire show.
Yeah, it was pointless. But I did like two things about it.
Mm.
One is, well, not like two things, but there's two things, two notes about it. One of them is he drinking alcohol while he's meant to be on watch?
No, yes. I think it's like energy drink. I think it's supposed to be like a bit from a Western when somebody's bored and they're on watch or whatever, drinking and messing about, like shooting cans with their guns
or
whatever.
Yeah.
I think it's supposed to have that feel. But there's no way he's drinking alcohol when
because he's supposed to be on watch and he's the pilot and stuff. Yeah.
And I think it's like energy drinks or something like that. But they frame it like it's alcohol and he sort of acts like he's a bit drunk. So it is confused. But I can't see that it can possibly be alcohol.
Well, I was thinking that maybe when you're a pilot and you have the injection of stuff that goes into your back, that sobers you up.
Maybe.
Well, it's only if you need to do a high G thing. You don't do that for normal.
I mean, it does other. I don't think it only does that. I think it's implied that, like, it makes you more alert and
The other note I have about that scene is, I like that he does the thing where he range finds with his gun, but then also that doesn't make much sense because if you're range finding with your gun, you're pointing it straight at something. You're not going to be going, all right, what's the range to that?
I don't like that because, like.
Well, it doesn't make sense. It's an illogical positioning.
Well,
not
just that. That is true, but also he's just doing like an inexact sort of twirl. Does he know exactly like down to the centimeter?
I think it's implied that he's quite good at doing quick maths because he's a pilot.
But given that, is it really any more use to measure it? With the laser measuring gun.
No, I get it.
Just eye it up and go,
it was about 3 meters. Yeah, I think
they just wanted to show it's a special effects heavy section.
Yeah, for no reason.
And also, I mean, you say that it's quite expensive, but when he flies down, he's very clearly on a harness because you can see the point on his
hips. Pivot point.
It's obviously wire work. But then the thing we're talking about being expensive is not so much the wire work as the floating things, the CGI'd.
I think practical effects are more like getting the wires in and all the safety stuff you have to go through for that was probably more expensive than that CGI.
Yeah, probably actually. And then they put in the bubbles in the end.
yeah.
They do that in Da Vinci or whatever.
I really that scene bothers me every time.
It's extraneous to the max.
Yeah, the purpose of this scene though is presumably to talk about how the Martian navy are sort of like sealing off the planet.
Yeah,
but that's the only story part of it. Yeah,
Yeah, he could have. They could have literally just gone to that.
They could have cut Alex. Much sure Alex being sort of bored looking and then suddenly getting a message.
Or just Holden going. Oh, I've got a message from Alex. They've tightened the cord.
Yeah. Or Alex seeing Alex sitting bored messing about just for a 10-second thing. Mm. Going back to it a wee bit later, but maybe once or twice, like that. And then. Mm. You know the change in
spoilers, tension, but there's more of these Alex in the ship scenes. There's more of these scenes coming up, and they're all boring. These scenes can't. And I didn't love Alex to begin with. Like I like the bits about him that I think are the same as you, but he's the least interesting of the crew. And then these scenes, I think, just sort of sealed it for me. Just like, I don't really like Alex anymore. He's not very interesting.
He could have done a gun twirl, couldn't he? That's very Western. Well, that's it.
This should have been a character. It doesn't do anything for the plot, but it gives you a bit more of Alex's character. But they don't really feel that even.
Really? No. It's
they feel like they're attempting that, but it doesn't really do anything in that regard.
I think this is one of those things where I bet everyone on set thought, oh, isn't this a funny thing? And it's like it's probably like some sort of inside joke that no one else off the set gets or something like that.
Yeah, how's that feel? Yeah.
It's just like, or maybe people were like, oh, Alex doesn't get much in this thing.
I think
that's
a lot of it, yeah. Yeah.
You know, but like that's okay, you know. It's like fine. Bobby's not in every episode this season, you know.
Well, she should be.
Should be.
Not every episode. She should be in every scene. Yeah.
Well, like in the background on someone's watch or something.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm watching the G7 and
no, I'm watching the Space Virgins podcast. There's a picture of Bobby on that all the time. Episode. Whatever.
Should we talk about Bobby?
Mm.
Well, duh.
Let's.
Actually, there's two things. One, I can sort of explain away. The other one is a very, very obvious error. But we'll get to that. So carry on.
Okay. So let's start talking off about Bobby by talking about Erin Wright. Because I think he has some interesting moments in this particular...
This is probably the most interesting he's been, really, this episode. Mm.
First time he's
sort of been fleshed out a bit beyond his sort of, you know, cartoon villain type.
Because I get that your standing principle with him is that he is just sort of in it for himself, in it to like save himself, all that kind of stuff.
He's a cork, yeah.
Selfish
prick.
But I don't, like, in this episode, he seems to be... But that's not necessarily.
I think it's guilt that's driving him, rather than conscience as such.
I believe. I think some of what he says is him trying to rationalize what he's done and present it as if it's a bit more. But I believe him a bit. I do think that was in there. I think that's how he justified it to himself.
Yeah, and I think. Yeah, I don't think he's as evil as he.
Well, I don't think he's evil. I don't think he's clever enough for.
That's the problem fundamentally
enough.
Is the kind of plan he's trying to pull off. Avicerella could have pulled it off. He's just not smart enough.
Yeah, it's sort of.
He's in over his head.
Yeah. But that being said, he is the one that notices that Martians are using peace for a distraction.
I love that bit and Avicerella's reaction to that. Like, what will we come to? You know, like, peace is a distraction. Like, she says, I wish I could disagree with you or something.
It's like, I wish I could disagree with you right now. So they're basically very aware. So they're settling the check, and they are they keep prodding for more Bobby, and really it seems to me like they're just looking for a way to like. You're not happy with her coming out here answering questions, are you?
Yeah, Bobby's the weak link. She's the other information they didn't want to get out is coming out because. We talked about this last episode. Yeah.
And who's that particularly evil-looking person she was with? He looked rather sinister, didn't he?
I like the Avicerella sort of point. And it's always a friend of the family.
Can we talk to that cartoon villain that was accompanying her?
Yeah, that's sort of didn't seem like the supportive
type. Yeah. Avicerella's snarky with him about that. Yeah.
And then. It's good stuff. And then, Bobby gets a dressing down from the chaplain. Which I am interested to know his orders, basically. I was going to say his motivation, but really his orders. Like, who is he?
Who's he? Well, we don't know who he's answering to, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
Or I get the feeling he's higher up than his current posting suggests.
Yeah, I get that sense too, yeah.
Oh, like a bit of a Walton Simons kind of thing.
Possibly.
From Deus Ex.
Possibly, yes.
It's like, yeah, like he runs FEMA, but he's actually the second most powerful man in the world. My suspicion is Jewel Pierre Mao. That's who I'm thinking he's taking his orders from. Poker face, yeah. I get you. That's why I think. Are we supposed to think that as an audience?
Well, no, that was a reverse poker face because, like Mao is involved.
He didn't just like take the hint and go away and goes, oh, I guess the proto molecule's not for me then.
Back to making burgers.
Yeah. Or plants, I go back to the garden.
Well, he makes bachelor chow. That's what he does. Oh no, that's Mao, not Chow. Oh, I think I just mixed up the actor's name and the character's name.
Whoa!
No. I think
Chinese racist now.
No, I think it's. No, never mind. Yeah, I'm sorry. I've been taken on to Chris's.
So, and of course, there's some heavy metaphoring with her using her purple heart to cut the seal in the window. Yes.
Right, before that, we need to go. Rewind slightly. At the start of that scene, just after she's had the dressing down from Twatty Man, she goes and picks up a knife. Now, I don't know if you've noticed this, but that is very obviously a rubber knife. She practically bends it right over. Have you seen that? Did you notice it?
Yeah, you did notice it.
Right, that's good. Yeah. So there's that. That's one of my two notes about.
Well,
that
I did scene. Have. I did have a slight way of justifying that, which is
no. I didn't have a way of justifying that.
This is an embassy. They're intentionally flimsy knives, so they can't be used as weapons.
That's what I assumed.
No, yeah. it's rubber. It's not even like a plastic one. It's like it bends. You, Mr. Video Man, get it up right. That's a mistake. That is a mistake. You can justify it as well. The next thing you can probably
Americans have had hostages.
Oh no! Wait.
Shiny. You know they go to the bother of making it look like metal by painting it expensively.
You are demonstrably wrong here, Hamish, and I'm going to demonstrably.
I thought I was wrong.
No, I froze the pic. I should have kept it. Should have made a screenshot. Go on then.
Okay, so this is meant to be a rubber knife.
Why would it be a fucking rubber knife, and why would it be painted to look like a real?
She flimses it. No, that's yeah. That's
a mistake.
No, that's not a mistake. That is a deliberate. They zoom in on her hands, and she's going.
I mean, knives can be quite bendy.
Yeah.
So like, why make a prop knife look like a metal stainless steel? Why is it?
We've established
it's bullshit. Bullshit.
She was arm wrestling her power armor. She is very, very strong.
But if it's metal, it wouldn't flim back. Why am I using the word flim so much? It's
no, it not would. Even no, if it was steel with enough carbon on it, it would spring back. Yeah.
No. Have you ever bent a knife?
Yeah. Like if you get like a paring knife,
not
bend
as
it,
much
it will,
as
it will,
that.
It will breathe.
It's totally because maybe she's a prisoner because you know, but the thing is, it's like it's flimsy that way, but it's sturdy that way. That's kind of how
Drew's had enough of you. He's gone.
Bullshit.
bullshit. That is a mistake in the show. Oh, you're muted. You're muted, Chris. You muted yourself. Quite right.
I muted myself.
Yeah,
but it zooms in on her going like
but she's checking the knife. She's meant to check the knife for sharpness or sturdiness, and she accidentally bends the prop knife. That's what happens. That's a mistake. That's what that is. Don't try and sci-fi it or anything. That's a fucking mistake. It's a small mistake, but it's a mistake.
I thought. See, the way I interpreted that is
you see conspiracy theories and things in every single thing in the show. You know.
But here's the thing, right? If she's a prisoner, right? You don't give prisoners.
She's not a prisoner.
She asks.
She's not a prisoner. She's been confined to quarters by her people. She's not a prisoner No.
And if she's like mentally unwell or mentally unstable.
Yeah, let it go though.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
But that's not what that is. It's a fucking butter knife. Christ.
That's totally buyable, and it's totally, like, you know, it's a plastic knife that you get in prisons and stuff, and like, or mental health wards.
But they don't fucking make them. They don't paint them to look like. Oh, no. You're just trying to wind me up now.
This is all just
to wind up Hamish now. I'm convinced that's what's
going on. I didn't consider that was an error until you pointed it out, and I'm still not. Like, it's just not an error.
It is an error.
Because the thing is, it's like they're supposed to be flimsy because she's like, it's like, you know, plastic cutlery kind of, right?
No, why would they paint it? Drew, you've muted yourself. Why would they paint it to look like proper stainless steel? That's the question.
It didn't even look like stainless steel to me. I mean, because it's...
And it's
not
a butter
like...
knife as well. It's not a paring knife or any other tournament.
That's true. We lost Drew.
No, he's having trouble. He couldn't... He muted himself. Right, you need to flip over, Chris.
Okay. Mute me now, right? Okay.
Yeah. No, you had muted on the. You had your little mute symbol was up on your thing.
How did I do that?
There was some key, I would imagine. Incidentally, factual error. I'm just looking it up on IMDb. Factual. Don't go to IMDb, Chris. Too many spoilers. factual errors. Gravity is too high in all the scenes on Ganymede. Blah 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 blah. As a factual. Mm-hmm. They don't mention the knife though. Incidentally, that's what
I don't think it's. I don't think it's a plastic knife. I think it's.
It's fucking some, rubber. It's a rubber prop. It is a mistake by the actor
future,
in the scene.
It's future space metal, and it's designed such that if you try and stab somebody with it, it will just break. As we see, she breaks it on the...
You probably aren't allowed weapons in an embassy or something like that, right? Like that's.
I mean, Americans have literally had hostage situations in embassies. Like
We've had hostage situations in embassies.
Oh, really?
Okay. With the Iranian embassy. That was in the UK, wasn't it?
Yes.
I did actually cut my finger during the knife demonstration.
I thought you'd really cut it.
That's why they have rubber knives.
Exactly. Right, anyway, that one aside, you're both wrong. That one aside, also... While we've got the picture up, you notice when she takes her jacket off, she's got a sleeveless top on.
Mm-hmm.
A little while later, she's got a completely different top on.
Oh, really?
Oh, like a long sleeve top on.
Yeah, but it's not the jacket that she took off. It's a completely different one. Now, that I can say was, okay, she took another... She got a bit cold while she was messing about with the window, so she took another jacket out. That's fair enough. But it is... That's you know...
Let me just fast forward and see about this one. Oh, yeah. I suppose so. Like, yeah, you know, you can...
Yeah, she could have taken it out of her duffel bag. It's a different jacket, yeah. It's like a workout-type jacket with a little mesh things in places and stuff. Anyway. Yeah.
The bit where she falls off the roof, though.
Oh, God, yeah.
Like, first time, I was like, she's broken her fucking back. Like, there's two... She lands, like, on the small of her back on a roof thingy, and the rest of her back goes back like this, and then she lands on concrete flat on her back.
The stunt person was pretty amazing.
Yeah,
the silhouette of Bobby running though is quite hypnotic.
I
was a bit unsure because to me that looks like the type of fall that you do when you want to walk up, get back up, right?
She's clearly trained in falling. Like, you know, people who do what she does, like, they're trained. Yeah. She knows.
I mean, what are you talking about, the stunt actor or the...
Character-wise, I'm thinking, yeah. I mean, both is true, yeah, of course. Yeah. It looks fucking painful, though.
Yeah.
Falling at 1G if she's not used to it.
She is, though. They train in 1G.
They train in 1G, but they probably don't fall in 1G, do they?
I have wondered from time... How do they train in 1G?
Yeah, how do they...
Acceleration pods?
Yeah, just a big... Maybe they've got a station that rotates
enough. That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
That sounds expensive.
Mm-hmm. Well,
they spend a lot of money on the military, so, you know.
Yeah, maybe Fred Johnson can help. He's quite good at that kind of thing. I don't know, maybe, yeah.
Before we get too far from it, also we get confirmation this episode that DeGraff was killed. He didn't commit suicide. Mm. We get absolute confirmation about that. And Aaron Wright
tries to wash his hands of it slightly.
Yeah, but he was clearly.
Oh, that was nothing to do with that. Was nothing to do with me though. Although he doesn't deny it.
I just helped cover it up.
Yeah, he just covered it up. Yeah.
Yeah.
But Drew's still happy with that because he hates DeGraff.
Yeah, he had it coming.
Oh, hang on a minute. Okay, I'm just looking at all the Bobby things that she's broken. all right, a selection of Bobby junk.
I love that she uses the Purple Heart just as a tool. That's all it means to her, is its only use.
Yeah, yeah. So that was the point Chris was trying to make before I went.
Oh, yeah,
back.
Yeah. They done us a metaphor there.
And that's
a nice metaphor.
You're going to show us a picture of Bobby's junk, did you say?
So these are all of the things.
Oh, look, they all look like stainless fucking steel.
Which is a bendy, springy material.
Not a butter knife.
Literally makes springs out of it.
She's used a nail. There's a screw. I don't know if you can see the screw. Is that... do I need to move my chair or something?
What's the drinking bottle looking thing?
That looks like a coat hook. You know, like something.
Above, higher than that.
Higher than that.
The thing on the window frame. Yeah.
I don't know.
No idea what that is.
Is that like a? There's no. Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't. Yeah, she's got clothes strewn out over her bed and stuff when she leaves. So,
okay, yeah, that like I say, that I would have accepted as a she got cold while she was messing about.
Yeah, or maybe as, like yeah,
not as bad as the cutlery controversy.
No, not as bad as that.
It's our biggest controversy so far, I think, bigger than the spike.
No, the spike
bigger
is
than the spike. No,
I prefer this one to the spike.
And
one.
Oddly enough, Chris was wrong twice.
Well, I mean, the thing is, the show was wrong.
Actually, and I can't even remember who was wrong on the spike thing or who was
the whole move. The whole move.
No, I was the defense. I was on the other side of the spike thing.
Right. Okay.
I don't know what I don't even know what opinion I held on it, but I do know that the show moved the spike.
Your opinion was he was dead. Both of you, and my opinion was no, he could survive that plausibly.
He couldn't have survived where the spike was when he got spiked up.
Around. Yeah,
but like when he was in the mess hall or whatever, not in the mess hall.
Infirmary.
That's it. It was like down here. I don't know what's down here. That's like stomach. You could probably survive
liver.
Liver, maybe. Yeah, you could survive a liver. You know, so.
Anyway, back to this episode.
So
then she goes out the window and she runs away.
Hang on, and... combo controversy. If somebody was stabbed here with that knife...
I mean, it depends if it was a rubber knife or...
They'd just break.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I suppose if you dig deep enough, then it probably... Like, based on this image here... But it could be that it's just like they make like soft cutlery that you can't hurt people with.
It's a nanomaterial,
but it looks rubber. Stop trying to sci-fi it up. It's just a little mistake. Okay.
I guess I'm it's out of all of them, like the Ganymede probably thing bothers me more.
If the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit.
Okay. I like Spy's little, it's nice to work with the good guys again moment, isn't it?
That's lovely, yeah. He starts laughing and she thinks he's laughing at, and he's like, no, it just feels good.
It's just nice, yeah. I like this. So Aaron Wright he's like trying to... He's getting people to like work on the armor to work out if there's any protomolecule on it.
Yeah, that's what he's getting at, but he can't see it outright. Yeah.
And I don't know if that scene's going to lead to another scene, because that'd be kind of interesting to see if, like, oh, you missed a little bit of protomolecule, and now Earth's got the so Earth's government has the protomolecule, Mars has the protomolecule, Protogen has the protomolecule.
Well,
what I find interesting about that scene is, I after watching it a few times, as I did over the last few days, I was watching that scene and thinking about it from the other person's point of view, because they're not in view, there's no video screen, it's an audio thing, and it's like the boss is banging on about this, it's like, okay, sir. Yeah. It's just like, fuck's
sake. That email somebody, you know, my boss again, fucking getting on me, like, with vague instructions about looking for something.
Yeah, that's So I wonder. Yeah, I wonder if they will find something that will even actually they could use in the as a protomolecule. Because do you only need one protomolecule?
Well, they talked about seed crystals, didn't they?
Yeah, and when they're extracting it from Julie, they talk about like they've got enough to do.
There's enough to do stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll explain it more as time goes on.
I mean, I would hope so, right? Bobby meets the friendly doctor, and he's like, "If you give me your bone density medicine or whatever it is, I can trade that for a month's supply."
Well, the important thing about this scene is obviously all of Bobby's preconceptions.
How polite she is as well.
But yeah, all of her preconceptions about what, you know, Earth, the takers, you know, the people who are just living on basic assistance, as they call it, like they're all challenged, and she realizes, oh, these are just decent people who want to be productive the same as everybody else. The anti-racist thing of, yeah, the best way to overcome a prejudice is to, you know, be familiar with it.
Yeah.
live together and experience each other.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose the Martian impression is that they're all fat off wealth or whatever it is, isn't it?
Lazy, I think, is that Martians are driven, they're all got one purpose, and Earthers just want to get high and do nothing all day kind of thing. And she meets people who pop that bubble.
Yeah.
And he's cool. He's a cool character. I like him.
Yeah, because I was a bit worried he'd turn a bit creepy.
The bit where he literally tells her to close her eyes, like a bit of me was like, don't stab her. Don't fucking stab her. Don't mug her.
Yeah, there was a bit of me that was waiting for it to... But like, nah, he's nice. Like, just get a bit... A surprisingly not creepy man, which in real life might be a whole different story, but this is Earth in the future. I think it does actually illustrate. He said he was put on the vocation list when he was 17, and he's like 50, whatever, and still waiting. Which I think
fucking
just
great for 50 as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
I think he says he's 52, and it's been 35 years.
So, yeah, like he's. I don't know. So I guess is it really that fewer people? Does that mean like does that mean that there's not an abundance of doctors? It doesn't appear like there's abundance of doctors. It appears that he's still needed
needed in a poor area. He's not needed in a rich people's area. So why does he need to get qualifications and spend have time spent on them and effort? You know.
Yeah. So it's not like all things.
I don't want to say too much because you'll discover more about Earth as we go along. So this is your first big taste of the disparity.
Yeah, and not far from the UN building either, of course.
Ironically,
this is New York, right?
Yes,
the capital of the world, is it?
Well, it's where the UN building is. I mean, it really at the moment as well, you know.
Yeah, they should build it on Antarctica. That'd be cool.
Not practical, but cool.
But it's like, isn't Antarctica like...
Actually, no. The moon.
The moon?
Yeah, neutral territory.
Well, so is Antarctica. There's the Antarctica.
Yeah, but the moon's not fucking... Well, I guess the moon's quite nippy as well at times, but, you know.
At times, yeah.
Lack of atmosphere aside.
Hey, get a party going.
Yeah.
Well, you can't. There's no atmosphere.
So, and then, of course, we have a meeting of the two characters. So nice Doctor Man points her in the direction of the ocean, which honestly I'm kind of surprised that like she couldn't work it out.
Well, right? You've got to remember, like, she's completely unfamiliar with this. And she's kind of like freaked out by the horizon and everything as well. Yeah. Like, she's very disoriented.
She wouldn't know really.
But I still love how polite she is. It's so wonderfully polite. Yeah. Excuse me.
But she doesn't know what, you know, because we'd follow like the smell and the sound, right? And the seagulls and like, but she doesn't know any of that.
That's true, yeah. But also you did tell a mistruth. You said she dips her toes in the ocean. She doesn't. She sits by the ocean. No dipping of toes.
Oh, no, she gets her feet wet.
No, she doesn't.
I swear she... Because she takes her shoes off, right?
Takes her shoes off.
Is there no... We're going to sound like fucking foot fetishists now. Like,
I'm definitely not a foot fetishist.
Does she? No, me either. No. Disgusting. But I'm going to have a look.
Yeah. Apparently... so I've got it here. If you click on me, you can... She's out of frame. She's a bit... Oh, no, so there she is. That's where she sits.
Yeah, but she walks a little bit before that.
All right, CSI time. Let's put the hat on. actually, I think...
The next controversy.
I heard about foot fetishes is that apparently the part of the brain that processes feet touching and the part of the brain that does sexual arousal are very close together. And apparently, I don't know, this is like...
I like all this, disclaimer.
Disclaimer, like it's probably pseudoscientific bullshit.
But no, I was thinking more along the lines of, a friend told me that such and such, you know.
Yeah.
I've got this
friend. Okay, hang on, not to interrupt, but at 38 minutes, 25 seconds, she takes her shoes off, she takes a step, and you hear a little splooshy noise. Which could be the sea lapping in, but it's a smaller. It's like a bloop. My foot's gone in the water sound.
I don't know. I mean, like,
I think she paddles a little bit, then backs up and sits down.
No footprints to demonstrate that in this picture.
I'm afraid. They get washed away, don't they? And also, no, they don't. Jesus is carrying her. So,
right, okay. Anyway, apparently with foot fetishism is apparently like basically it's one of those things that you either have or you don't have. Like it's like if those neural pathways jumble up, you love feet all the way. And if they don't, it's not something apparently it's not something you can get into, like, or not necessarily. I'm
get
sure
into,
you can.
But
like, yeah, like it's something
you either
like,
have it or you don't.
Yeah. Apparently. Oh, right. I don't know. That's what someone.
I have an absolute revulsion for feet.
Yeah, like,
that's quite common.
Although
yeah.
I'm quite it's I do find socked feet twitching a bit quite cute.
Oh, yeah, no, that's nice. Yeah. Just so long as you don't have to see the toes and the disgusting foot pieces.
Yeah.
And I'm completely, like, agnostic on feet. They're just feet.
You're not sure whether they exist or not?
I'm pretty sure they exist. But, I don't have strong opinions. Okay. I'm a foot centrist. It's like, they're not great. They don't gross me out. Like it's just like
I'm an amputation advocate.
That's a bit extreme.
Well, you know, I mean, America. They, you know, they circumcise penis to babies at birth commonly. Mm. I think we should just stop doing that. That's genital mutilation. But start doing it with feet, which is your baby.
Sometimes it's done for medical reasons, though.
If it's done for medical reasons,
there are some. But,
you know, at birth, cut the feet off, replace them with like nicely made wooden little pods. Everybody be happier.
That's not mutilation then, no?
It's not a genital mutilation.
What about those like springy feet that they have in the Paralympics?
Yeah, you get to choose. I mean, you know, when you become an adult, you can choose your feet. And
if you murder somebody, then you get them taken away?
Yes, and then you can't run.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That's an Oscar Pistorius joke, right?
Yeah.
not that I find it. I mean, yes, reference, I would say, more than a joke. I don't find the whole thing particularly funny.
All right. And also, this picture here, just one that I happened to land on. This looks very heroic. There's also Spy in
it's a very heroic pose, isn't it?
It's Star Wars, it's like Empire Strikes Back kind of
and again Hamish keeps talking about Bobby's politeness, but I think there's a bit in this scene where she says fuck you ma'am
yeah.
Which I love.
I'm warming up to Bobby after this episode, actually.
I've definitely warmed up to Bobby a lot.
Like she's starting to reveal a bit more of a sensitive side, you know.
For the first time in her life,
she's questioning things.
She's presented with complexity. It's not as simple as she thought it was,
and that's the point.
You're seeing her respond to that. Like, she's not changed. Mm. The circumstances around her have changed, and she's responding to something different.
Yeah. She actually, Avicerella, this is kind of interesting. Avicerella has information about the proto-molecule man, which does that come
from... She got from
Erin Wright, yeah. And I didn't know whether or not this was like a known entity or whether or not it was still a mystery to everyone. Whether or not it was just like, oops, someone spilled some proto-molecule. Oh, he turned into a man. Oh, he's going on a rampage.
Well, no, I mean, Jean-Pierre Maury, Protogen, obviously know what it is, you know.
It's not proto-molecule man, it's proto-molecule man's monster.
Jean-Pierre's monster. we get a pretty decent look at this proto-man. And I'll pop this one up as well. And this is obviously going to... I don't even know if Bobby even really answers or says anything. He's a little bit on this side. Hang on, I've got to just... Is it gonna redirect my face?
Mm. Need to go further.
Am I there?
Yeah, no, it doesn't care about your face at the moment.
Okay, well, if, you know...
Yeah. We're looking like force ghosts.
I'm quite amused by the lengths you go to try and get this to work when you could just put something up in a different way, you know.
This is branding.
I get it. And I'm down for it. Yeah.
This is how we do it.
It's also a way of forcing people to watch the show. You're like, it's like, well, if you want to see it.
Yeah, it's there, the mystery.
Speaking of which, Wing listened to the... He said he listened to the latest episode to hear my racism. Mm-hmm. and due to watching the episode, he's now curious about the show, and he's going to go and watch the show, which... Yet again, racism solves things.
Okay. Actually, I've had a lot of good feedback from the show, actually. My friend Carla's
about
really
the racism,
enjoying it.
Or?
Oh, really?
Yeah. I asked her.
Hello, Carla.
I asked her who's her crush on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to guess Bobby? Who it is?
As in characters from the show or Oz?
No, characters from the show.
Okay.
It's not going to be
Hamish.
No.
Okay, characters from the show. I mean, if it's not Bobby, she's wrong.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
What's her? What gender What's presentation does she prefer?
Let's just say it's any gender, right?
Okay.
Naomi?
Who would
Amos?
No.
Oh, okay.
I did ask specifically about Amos.
Holden then?
No.
No, okay. Fucking hell.
Miller?
Yeah.
Miller. Ah, right.
Miller is
sorry, I'm starting to forget Miller because he's not been in it for a wee while.
Miller, you know, if I were
because he crashed into a planet.
As Amos said, if they would let me, you know. Bobby would be up there, but Miller would be up there as well. He's a handsome man.
Yeah. I think I get the Miller appeal more than I get all the other appeals because he's kind of like he's a bit soft, but also like a bit mysterious.
He's a gentle bad boy.
Yeah, a gentle bad boy. Yeah,
which is exactly, you know, who doesn't like that?
Exactly. Yeah. He's just kind of got the. Whereas Amos is a rough bad boy, which some are into. But
like Amos is more not really bad boy so much as like jock, if you know, on a very basic level.
Yeah. So Avicerella sort of basically offers up the olive branch. Oh, there's a drone in the background of that scene. Actually, I've just noticed.
Mm.
Yeah, the drones a lot. Yeah.
There's drones everywhere. Of course, UN building.
I think that's there to imply that that's how they found her.
Yeah.
that's what Spy hacked into to find out what, you know, where they.
Yeah.
Because she does look up at a drone as well when she's talking to the, just before she talks to the doctor guy.
But obviously, at this point, Bobby thinks she's being opped, right? She's got no reason to believe what these people are saying at this point.
Except she has been shown a picture of Proto Man.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that's like.
Yeah, but for all she knows, that could be an Earth weapon.
Mm.
Yeah, but why then would she be showing it to a Martian?
Well, that's the point. She doesn't know. It could be like they could be trying to. I mean, the most likely reading is they're trying to manipulate her into betraying. You know, blah blah blah.
Mm. Yeah, but she knows. She's like, oh, that's the thing that attacked me. Oh, Avicerella is. Sort of knows about it, but like wants my help. Like, presumably, like, yeah, you're right. Like, and her first instinct might be the smart one, which is, don't play mind games with me. And especially with someone like Avicerella, who's clearly, smooth, you know, like she's kind of clearly very adept and deft.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. I mean, She's going to know about Avicerella. She's going to know her reputation as, you know, a political, you know, manipulator and, you know, game player and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So, I think that she will think about it, and I think she will soften on reflection.
Mm.
That's my opinion.
Interesting.
Ah, of course, yeah, interesting.
I think I've said it before, it's a bit spoilery, but yeah, no, the next episode is my favourite episode in the entire show, and it's for Bobby reasons.
Okay.
I think it's in the next episode.
I think like more happened in this episode than it felt, because first time when I watched it without any pressure or anything like that, I thought, oh well, they haven't really moved the plot forward very much, but they're just sort of moving the characters in place for what's presumably going to be. I mean, we've actually moved on a fair few episodes now, because this is episode 10 out of 13. Mm-hmm. So we've got the final three episodes, so either the next episode is going to continue build up with a two episode ending part, or we're going to have like two episodes that are going to be eventful and then one episode that might wrap it up.
I will say, remember, we've kind of had a finale-ish episode in the middle.
Yes, the end of the first
season. Yeah, that might be the big thing for this series, or it might be another, you know, not necessarily going to be...
Are you tempering my expectations?
A little bit. Not tempering as in it's like it's going to be disappointing, but as in don't necessarily expect the show to follow like the rhythms that shows usually follow necessarily.
Okay. So we might not understand the origins of Proto Man in this season.
Mm.
Oh, I want to find out about Proto Man. All right. Well, I'm sure it'll be good no matter what.
Have we done? I think
we've done everything, yeah.
This is the very end part, isn't it?
My only other note that we haven't covered is I've got a note that says Naomi getting judgmental, and I think that's something she says near the end that annoys me, but I can't remember what that is.
You're annoyed by Naomi at the moment, anyway.
And Naomi starts to annoy me at this point, yeah. Mm. When she, you're being mean, Holden, gets a bit grating.
Was there anything in this episode on the Arbogast?
I don't think there was.
Right, okay.
Is that the Martian one?
No, the Arbogast is the science ship.
The one going to Venus.
Oh, right. Nothing from there.
We do get to see a cool future cooking pot, though, that has the temperature on the outside. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, like ingredients or a recipe or something.
Mm.
Oh, in the Earth...
when she's going around the Earth slums or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, and they've got—is that a water distiller or something?
Yeah, I think it's a distillery.
Well,
yeah.
I was thinking booze distillery is what I thought.
Well, I thought it was a water filter because they're living off the water straight from, you know, could be a desalination thing. All of the above.
I mean, he talks about the friendly doctor guy talks about having to drink sewer water. Like, is that?
Yeah.
Is that I think he's like, what's the word for exaggerating a bit, but you know, just in a storytelling play. Yeah, a bit hyperbolic, but I mean, it could be literal. I don't know.
I mean,
you would think Earth would take care of its people a little bit better than that.
Well, you'd think there wouldn't be any of them living under a bridge.
Yeah.
That's. I mean, you think with like, because they refer it as basic assistance, is it?
Mm-hmm.
But obviously that seems to be like insufficient then.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
Well,
seem...
there's population pressure and it's the biggest problem they've got on Earth, apparently.
Do they say
of
what
that
the population
social
of Earth is?
Thing? Don't they mention it? But they do say it's very high.
No, I think they do. Somebody says it could kill this many people, which would be this proportion of Earth's population, or something at some point, maybe in the future.
There's a UN study, and apparently that's one of the things the UN are actually quite good at is calculating like world populations and trends and stuff. And apparently, they reckon that our Earth population will peak at around something like 2060. And then actually start declining to be about, I think it's like 7 or 8 billion by the end of the century.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's even particularly speculative. That is that
30
is,
billion is the number I'm getting here
for Earth. Because it's like our population. Yeah, because it's just based on trends that when people get better educated, they have fewer kids.
Mm.
That's what it seems to come down to.
And presumably, readily available contraceptive options would be a big player in that, right?
Less than, it doesn't seem to correlate to that as well as it just correlates to education.
Like
there's places with high contraception availability with low education where birth rates are as high as blah blah blah. The only thing it seems to, and like nobody's really entirely sure on the causation there, but yeah.
Well, if you're in a position where you can choose whether or not you have children.
Mm-hmm.
And you are educated, so you have not just you have several options of life at your disposal.
Yeah,
professional, home traditional homekeeper type of thing, or everything in between. Then I think it gives you more autonomy. Like both education and contraceptive gives you, self determination or like autonomy,
which is why the far right and United States don't like it, and they're trying to get it. They're trying to get Farage to introduce the same ideas here.
But also with theirs as well, is there's a whole white supremacy argument for it.
Part of it.
Because racially it gets complicated. But
because like but I don't know, like,
it's about not having. It's ultimately about stopping women from having choices and control.
And also making sure there's enough white people because, we don't want to end up as a minority.
But I think the controlling women isn't the end goal. It's instrumental to
it's not to make it okay. Yes, incidentally, yes, we're disagreeing with this as a thing.
I mean, yeah, this is the Hitler flop.
Holocaust aside,
I think we're done, though. Are we done?
We're done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
This conversation can only get darker from here.
Yes.
Yes.
We need something silly and light from one of us to end it.
Did I have some banter prepared left over or something? Oh, I did.
I didn't know you prepare your banter.
Prepared banter?
No, I was watching this, right? So on BBC iPlayer, right, you know when they say, when it rolls over to something else if you're not paying attention?
No.
I don't use iPlayer, but I understand the concept.
So it played over to a show called Ginger's House, which I don't know if it's an iPlayer exclusive or like on BBC 3 or 4 or 5 million or whatever, because it's definitely not on BBC 1 or 2. But it's a... it was a 10-minute show, very short, and it's a comedy show set in this house run by a drag queen called something like Ginger Johnson, and she does an egg and spoon race, and then she gets a lesbian to assemble flat pack furniture, And it's kind of like, it's a little bit like Hot Frosty, where it's kind of just silly but nice. And and I did actually, for a 10-minute show, laugh out loud about two or three times. It was episode six.
What's it called? Sorry? Ginger's House?
Ginger's House. It, for some reason, it put me straight onto episode six. So I think it's just like 6 10-minute videos on iPlayer of just like silly drag queen action. But
and this is your prepared banter.
Well, but this is the second string. I'll leave this to the end of the show. The first prepared banter, of course, was Hot Frosty.
Yeah, no, that was higher quality banter, in my opinion.
Yeah. But this is just wrapping up banter. And to be honest, this is banter that I just like left here under the table. Like it's
As you do.
But it's I think what they do is when there's a winner of like a RuPaul's Drag Race thing, they give them like a little bit of a TV show just for a laugh. So this is just general silliness that's wholesome and I won't spoil any more because you know, but like if you just want something to like, you know, yeah, it's quite funny because it's British. It's like it's British drag queen humor.
It's funny because it's British. The fucking jingoism.